This is Homefront South Dakota, and could you give me your name and age?
Andrew S. Baer, and my age is 79 right now. I'll be 80s this next month.
And what is your hometown?
Ipswich, South Dakota. Born and raised there.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service to our country. And also, could you just name your branch of service and that information?
It was the old Army Air Force at that time, which now is a separate branch of the service, and it is called the Air Force. And but at that time, it was in the Army. When I was drafted, everybody went into the Army, but they kind of give you a choice. You could go into the Navy, Army, or Air Force, or the Marines. If some of the other branches were their quota was full, then you had second choice. My first choice when they asked me that was the Navy. My second choice was the Air Force. The Navy's quota was full, so I went into the old Army Air Force.
And what year was that?
That was in 1946, right at the end of the war.
Okay. And you were drafted?
I was drafted.
How old were you during the beginning of the war?
I was 18 years old. I turned 18 on the 25th of October, and I was sworn into the service on the 6th day of January. I was drafted that fast.
So you were probably in high school when the war
No, I
started.
was helping my dad at the time.
Okay. And what were you doing?
My dad was in the trucking business, and at that time there was very few farmers had their own trucks, so we hauled an awful lot of grain and things like that for the farmers. And we unloaded just about everything that came into the town of Ipswich, which is on the main line of the Milwaukee at that time, railroad. And so there was an awful lot of railroad cars that we unloaded at the time. Including carloads of coal and whatever. At that time there, we weren't choosy. We'd done whatever we had to do. But we did, our main thing was hauling grain for the farmers, and we used to average over 100,000 bushels of grain a year that we hauled. And that was just from that small community. It was something that just had to be done, and we done it. And being on the main line of the Milwaukee, there was an awful lot of troop trains that came through and war trains, things that we never even knew that was all covered. We didn't know what was under. And an awful lot of troop trains that came through. Two of my sisters went down to the train and helped as like USO helpers, and handed out old papers and magazines and lunch, sandwiches to whenever a troop train came through and had to stop. I think some of that I'd have put down on there before. We hauled an awful lot of things. We donated a lot of time. At that time there, they used to take up collections of things that were hard to come by. At that time, metal, iron was hard to come by. And farmers donated, they had drives, and farmers would donate a lot of their old iron piles. Being that we were in the trucking business, my dad would donate the truck, and him and I, we would donate our time, and we would go out and load the iron, haul it back in, and load it into cars that was sitting on the sidetrack of the railroad. I don't know what else you.
Well, yeah, no, that's really interesting. So you were seeing a lot of troops coming through on the train, even though you were under 18, so you were still with your family. How aware were you of the war going on overseas?
Well, I was very aware of the war. Two of my older brothers were already in. One of them went in before Pearl Harbor. They were both drafted. And one of them, and my oldest brother, they were both drafted at the same time. And my oldest brother was rejected, and then But my second oldest brother, he was accepted. And then a year later, my oldest brother got redrafted again, and he passed that time. But by that time, Pearl Harbor had. So I was really aware of the war, yes. And there was, what, 11, I think, or 12 people, young boys, young men, that were killed from my home community there. So I was very well aware. And in the book that they made up of all of the servicemen during World War II that had served, there's pictures of all of the ones that were killed. Two of them were brothers. I used to chum around with their younger brother. So I was very well aware of the war. Sometimes I wished that I was a little older so I could have gotten in on it, but just wishing.
How do you remember hearing about the Pearl Harbor attack and what you thought at that, or how you felt?
Well, when Pearl Harbor happened, when it came over the radio, it was a Sunday afternoon, and I was downtown in the old CNC cafe. It took a while before it really registered. I was only 14 at the time, so it took a little while before it really registered what it really meant. But after it really registered, I don't know, I probably can't even tell you what my thoughts were at the time. I couldn't imagine why anyone would want to do something like that to start out with. I think that was my biggest thing. Why?
You mentioned having two brothers in the service. How did it affect your family life to have those brothers away?
Well, let's put it like this. When they were drafted, they were older than I was. I was still going to school. Although it was in the summertime, I would help. But by the time I was 13, both of them were in the service. I had to take their place. I was doing a man's work when I was 13 years old. At that time, their education was getting to be where almost mandatory, but things didn't work out that way. I didn't go to high school because I had to stay home and work. I did finish the eighth grade, and then I went worked with my dad until I was drafted. And when I came back out, I worked with him for another 6 or 8 months. My younger brother stepped in my shoes when I got drafted, and he was way too young, so he was never drafted. But anyway, it interrupted all the whole, well, everybody. I think, I don't care who you were or what you'd done at that time there, I think you were affected somewhere along the line, whether it was directly or indirectly. But then after I come out of the service, I went back to school, I took my GED test and so on. But
did you get to participate in the GI Bill? Which
Yes, I picked up on that, and I trained as a lumberyard manager. They had a lumberyard. Peavey Lumberyard was in my hometown, and they had a lot of lumberyards. And eventually, I was a manager of J.F. Anderson Lumberyard at Myrtle. And that pretty much affected my life all the way through. I stayed in the lumber game pretty much all my life, either as a carpenter or as in the lumber business.
Mm-hmm. And when you were drafted, it was 1946, you said.
Right.
So what did you do when you were drafted? What was your job?
Well, when I was drafted, of course, the first thing that you'd done after you I was inducted at Fort Snelling, Minnesota, Minneapolis, and went. I got sent to Shepherd Field, Texas, and that's where I took my basic. And then from there over to Snootfield, Illinois, for radio operator school. And then I was also stationed down in Keesler Field, Mississippi. So, yeah.
So they just kind of put you on different bases and.
Wherever you was needed at the time, or sometimes if it was going to school, you'd get sent there, or when they had certain times that different classes would start, and then it'd end, and another batch would come in, and that's just the way they would operate.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you graduated out of the school, whichever, I don't care what branch or what Air Force it was, or where, that if they needed a radio man, that's where you went.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You were, you know, during the war years when the fighting was happening, like in the Pacific and the and Europe, you were younger, and so you just heard about it, probably. Do you remember what stood out to you, like what kind of images you had?
Well, I used to read the Life magazine, and they always kept a pretty good review of what was going on in the war. And I was reading on this even before World War II, when Germany was taking Poland and all them little countries. I was reading all that stuff. My folks never had the Life magazine, but the barber shop had the Life magazine. And in the evening, I'd go down there and I'd read. And my oldest brother, of course, when he was in, he got sent to the Pacific. He spent 3.5 years over there. He hit a lot of the major battles, a lot of the beachheads and stuff. But I don't know. A lot of things would go through your mind, and you'd try to picture what it could be or what it was. Even though you see in pictures of it, you still couldn't really grasp what it was really all about. It was just something that you were guessing, and I think that was about it.
Mm-hmm. And what was the scariest thing about the war for you when you would be reading about it, or, you know, seeing pictures in magazines?
Well, it was kind of, I don't know if it was really scary, because a lot of the things you just couldn't comprehend what it was all about. A lot of things, even as today, there's a lot of things that happen, and you weren't there, so you're just guessing at what happened. So really, it kind of leaves you out here in limbo somewhere. You really can't put your finger on it, but you still know what happened. A lot of it was bad. I learned a lot even after I got home. At that time there, they had what they call displaced persons, DPs they called them. And people from the United States would sponsor. Now these people were people from these countries that Germany had taken over, little countries, and they had taken a lot of the older people, and if they were a carpenter, they had to do carpenter work, whatever. If they were younger people, sometimes they would put them in factories and make them work. If they could put them in their own branch of the service, they would even do that. One family had sponsored a family from Poland, and it was a man and his wife. The man that had been a prisoner of the Germans, and he was a carpenter, so he had to teach the young Germans how to do carpenter work. They had two children, two boys. One of them was younger, well, both of them were younger than me, but one of them was probably 2-3 years younger than me. I kind of took him under my wing. He could speak a little English, not too much. And he told me a lot of things of what went on over there. So a lot of the things you got secondhanded, but it came from good sources so that you really knew, had a pretty good idea of what was going on.
And so that was the Pol a Polish family that was kind of placed in Ipswich. Okay. How do you think, knowing that, knowing that secondhand, how do you think that affected the way you viewed the world?
A lot of that stuff probably affected you and you didn't even realize it. It's just like I'm blind in one eye. And although I still have my eye, but I can't see. You learn to compensate for it. Whether if you do it deliberately or whether if you, I don't know how, I can't tell you how it happens, but you automatically just do things. And a lot of got people ask me, well, how can you do that? You're blind in one eye. In my carpenter work, was working, I like to work up high. And one day I was working on the power plant over at Wheatland, Wyoming. And we were up about 180 feet and walking beams and things. And one of the superintendents came up and he called me over and he started telling me something. And all of a sudden he looked at me and he says, what's the matter with your one eye? I said, I'm blind in it. Well, he said, you can't work up here. I said, I've been up here ever since we got up here. Ever since I put the steel up here. Well, you can't do that. I said, why can't I? Medical science says that you can't judge distance if you're blind in one eye. I said, well, I don't know about that, but I said, I'll judge distance with anybody. And so you do compensate. And that's about the way it is when you heard about the war. All of these guys that were in on these islands, all these guys that were in or wherever they were at, you had a pretty good idea of what they were going through, just an idea, because nobody would ever know what they really went through.
Do you remember getting letters home from your brothers and reading those together, like as a family or anything?
Oh yeah. My oldest brother, of course, he was the one that was he seen the more action than any of us. Well, he really seen a lot of action, and sometimes we didn't hear from him for maybe 2 or 3 months. I don't know what went through my folks' mind. I have an idea now that I have children of my own, but at the time, I really couldn't tell you what it really meant. And then all of a sudden, why, you'd either get a letter or we had one guy who was a barber in my hometown, and he wrote to just about every serviceman that was ever drafted. And I got some of those letters. And he would keep people posted because some of the guys would run into somebody and they would write to him. And I can remember one time we hadn't heard my brother for, I don't know, a couple months maybe. And one day my dad and I was walking down the street and Gaddy Hart called us and he said, come on over, I said, I want to talk to you. He said, I just got a letter from Dan Dosh. He said, he's run into Stan. And just things like that, see. So you lots of times you got news that you never expected, and lots of times after we once found out how Gaddy Hart kept track of all of these guys and wrote letters to them and everything, I know my dad every once in a while probably go in and talk to him and say, I haven't heard from Stan for a long time. Have you heard anything?
Wow. And do you remember, did you feel worried or about your brothers, or did you think about that?
I really can't, couldn't tell you that. I don't know. It's too long ago.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm just curious. And then the other thing I was wondering, how did you feel when you had to stop going to school, when you had to start working with your dad?
Just something you had to do. You never thought anything of it.
So you didn't feel like
No.
bad or just.
No, not one bit. Just something that at that time we had to do, and you done it. And it isn't any worse doing that than it is for you if you would say offered another job, let's say for instance, and you had to make a decision one way or the other. So whether it was right, wrong, or otherwise, you made the decision, you done it.
Before we close tape on the interview, are there any other experiences from that time that you'd like to share?
Well, there's a lot of things that happened at that time that affected everybody, like rations and things like that. There's so many things that I don't think you could really put your finger on one certain thing and say, this affected me more, unless you was probably in a business that maybe you couldn't get something because directly from the war, because of the war. But being that I wasn't into that fraction of the world at that time there, it never affected me, so I really couldn't tell you that.
Is there anything when you think about that time that stands out about it, that you always come back to and remember?
I think the thing that really sticks in my mind was all of the boys. Now, Edmonds County isn't really a very big county, but you would go to a dance, let's say for instance, or any celebration, there were very few young people, young men. A lot of the kids I went to school with, chummed around with, it, a year or two older than me. They were already in, so they weren't around. And it was just a different world. But still, you done what you had to do. You were just.
But yeah, it must have really changed the atmosphere.
It changed everything, yes.
And one thing I just want to do, the last thing before I stop, there's a book that was scanned, the photos were scanned, and it shows pictures of people from that county who, of men from that county who died during the war. Could you just describe that book and just tell us a little bit about
Well,
it?
it was a book. I think it probably started with three of the guys from my hometown that wanted to have a some kind of a record for future. And thank God that they had the initiative to go ahead and push it through. They just as the boys came home, they would contact them and say, sometime if you have time, stop in. If you got a picture, bring it along. I want to. Then they'd tell us what they was trying to do. Okay, in the back end of that book, there is 84 names. And out of these 84 names, the first one that's on it is one of my first cousins. He was a farm boy. He was drafted, went into the army, and would you believe he was a garden gunner on the ship Queen Mary. The ship, the Queen Mary, at that time hauled Roosevelt, Stalin, Churchill back and forth to different meetings. He spent more time on the ship than what a lot of sailors did. He spent 4 years on that ship. So in that book, with all of these names, out of these 84, out of I would say there was probably 1,200 people out of Edmonds County that was in the service. There's 84 of them they didn't have any record of except their name. They knew they was drafted, and but nothing else. They were some of the boys that never came forward and given their picture or anything like that. There's three of the boys that are in that were a year ahead of me in school. One of them, him and I were in the same class. He was a year older than me, but and he got killed in the Battle of the Bulge. Another kid, who was our neighbor boy, he got killed in the same Battle of the Bulge. There's two brothers that got killed, one in the Pacific and one in the European theater, about 2 months apart. I used to chum around with three of them brothers. So, yes, it affected you. Like I said, lots of times, whether if, I don't care, it affected everybody. Whether if you was indirectly or indirectly, it affected you. It had something to do with your life.
Andy, thank you very much for sharing. I could keep asking you questions, but we're running out of time. So, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. And it was a pleasure.